Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Millennial in the Middle. I'm Connor DeLynn. I'm about to play for you an interview I recently did with Danielle Farage. This conversation is actually the first time I met her and talked to her, and the interview is remote. She was doing the episode from Paris, where she's working remotely right now. And I followed her for about 6 months on LinkedIn. And she is a blogger. She's a speaker. She's on all sorts of podcast shows. She's got her hands in a lot of pots. But she considers herself a work futurist and an advocate for the Gen Z mentality. And the way she breaks down kind of the differences in how we're evolving in our culture, in the workplace, in society, and as individuals is something that I felt like just had to be on this show. You know, always I feel like we head back to this theme of finding the middle. And to me, one of the biggest takeaways from this interview that you're about to hear is she talks about the phrase work-life balance. And basically, like, that's not a thing. To try and look at work and life as opposites and as polarities that are extreme fighting against each other, and we're trying to find a way to manage those two in the same place, is really an old school way of thinking. And she talked about how work-life integration and how knowing that your job is your life, it's a part of it, and your time with family, that's your life too. How do you make all of that fulfilling and passion filled and something that you feel, you know, that you're gaining from as much as you can? So that was one of my favorite takeaways. I hope you enjoy this interview. Go follow her on LinkedIn. It is Danielle Farage. You'll see the notes here in the episode description, and join her movement. I think she's doing good things. And after the interview, it is very clear, I don't think this will be the last time the two of us collaborate. She was awesome. So thanks, Danielle. Enjoy the interview. Danielle, ever since I saw you on LinkedIn months back, I'm like, I've got to get her on this show. And it finally happened. You're finally here. Thanks so much for joining us.
Excited to chat today, Connor. Good to see you.
And you're at a remote podcast studio in Paris because, you know, I can't keep up with you. You're all over the world traveling and working. So that's where you are today, right?
That's correct. I'm remote working in Paris, visiting my team for 2 weeks. Just got back from a company retreat from Monday to Wednesday. And now I'm working on Friday and then having a weekend. And the next week we're also going to be together in Paris, and then followed by Madrid for the weekend, Barcelona the next week, working with my cousin, and then I'll go home back
Very
to New York.
Cool. Well, I definitely want to dive in today, that experience of, I mean, just some of the basics too, of like, where do you stay? How do you find a place to work? My fear is always like, what about Wi-Fi, right? What if I go somewhere and they don't have good Wi-Fi? So totally. I want to dive into all of that. But first, let's start here. You call yourself on LinkedIn a work futurist. And I love that phrase, but I want to hear from you. What does that mean?
Yeah. So I guess first, I'll say I feel like I'm truly living the future of work, because I really do believe in the future of work where you can work from anywhere. You can choose the life that you want to live, right? You don't have to live to work. You can really work to live your life. And I feel like during the pandemic, a lot of people woke up to that reality of like, oh, wow, I actually can craft and curate the life that I want to live. If I want to go to Hawaii and surf every day because I love surfing, or maybe I haven't tried surfing ever and that's just, you know, something I want to do, I can go do that. And the possibilities are really super endless when you're working remotely. So I guess for me, you know, I was born into the working world during the pandemic. And when I graduated college, I was working a remote job. And it wasn't until 2 years later that I took this job where I actually met coworkers in person.
Wow.
So it's a long time, right? So I feel like in those 2 years, I really dug in both, you know, within myself and exploring what I went through via toxic work experience, via a really positive work experience. I helped to curate a community where we did virtual conferences, produced a podcast that explored the intersection of technology and hiring and talent acquisition and diversity and inclusion. So I really was able to learn so much about the human resources industry and really people, right? How do you treat people in the context of work while also experiencing what it was like to literally be born into the pandemic and into the future of work? Yeah. So when I came up with the term work futurist, it really was my intention to share my voice and to, because I work at a startup, I can really kind of say mostly whatever I want without many repercussions, and to use what I'm learning and to use my perspective as it's uniquely my own to then put it out there into the world and to help to elevate this consciousness of what work could and might look like across the board, and to really help people dig into, right, the intersection of culture. How does that impact an organization, how one person chooses to work? How does it impact your identity, right? What's the relationship between my own personal brand and the company I work for? Mm-hmm. And also in terms of diversity, right? How does remote work and the future of work impact diversity in the workplace and diversity in our own lives? So, I mean, there's so much obviously I could cover,
yeah.
But really at the heart of it, it's how do we bridge the gaps between someone like me who's, you know, an entry-level person or a younger person in the workplace and the older generations who've been in the workplace and who have other experiences to pull from? Mm-hmm. And how do we understand each other and bridge those gaps to really create more equitable, dynamic, and at the end of the day, free cultures?
Yeah. I think that's really well said, especially around the experiences that we have, right? Like
right.
Experiences shape us and the way we think. And so I think often we, you know, when you talk about the generational divide or this gap that you're trying to bridge, right? There's very much this idea of, well, I'm right because this is my experience. And well, no, I'm right. This is my experience. And both those things can be true at the same time. And so tell me, what do you feel has been the big shift in the difference of mindset, maybe from a value standpoint or priorities? What do you see standing above everything else?
You mean across generations, like generally, yeah. Or within my own?
I would say, like, if we were going to compare Gen Z and a boomer, like, what values do you see that, like, have really shifted and led us to what we think, you know, where we are now and where we're headed?
Yeah. It's a good question. I think that one of the main things has been, you know, the pandemic gave us a lot of time to sit at home and figure out what to do with our hands. And whether it was we're taking care of our kids or we are learning how to code or we're going on Clubhouse, which is what I did. I learned how to speak, right? And to write on LinkedIn. You know, whatever we're doing, I think it required a certain level of boredom, space, like a little bit of space for thinking, for like doing nothing, but then doing something, right? That then inspires more of whatever that productive thing looks like for you. So for example, I feel like before the pandemic, no one ever went on walks. Like, I feel like walks were like a novelty, like something you would do on vacation, right?
That's for old people.
Right. Or like your commute was your walk, right?
Yeah.
And it's also like disconnection, right? To leave your phone at home. I think we're not even close as a collective society, especially not Gen Z. There was a report that came out in, you know, the marketing world that Gen Z is consuming on average 13 hours of social media content per day. Jeez, that's a how's that even scary, possible? It's yeah. a scary number, right? So we're not even close to developing healthy habits as it relates to like disconnection from technology. I think there's a lot we can do there. But in terms of just connection to the world around us, I think that, you know, it includes family, it includes, you know, nature. And I feel like a lot of people, even boomers who I talk to, are more willing to venture into that world, mm-hmm. become uncomfortable, you know, with the silence and yep. to, you know, deal with their family life. I, for one, didn't really have a great relationship with my mom before the pandemic and certainly during it. And I think that the time that I spent with her, you know, locked down forced me to be like, okay, she's my mom. I need to accept her for who she is. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that, I think that's like one of the biggest shifts. And I think that that also helps with just having more empathy and compassion. You know, we saw into each other's homes for the first time, and really once you see that, you can't unsee it. And I think that that also helps with building empathy and understanding and trust. And then I guess this, another shift has been just, you know, when companies at the beginning or at the end of 2021 were saying, oh, you have to come back to the office, right? There was this whole thing about how Apple announced their plans and how most people didn't show up the next day. There was another one, New York Times, a couple weeks ago, where they were trying to lure people back to the office with lunch boxes that literally didn't have food inside of them. And I met
just
someone
a
on
detail.
The Yeah, just like these like $70 lunch boxes they spent like $70,000 on. It's like, it's no big deal. And you know, I think it illustrates some of that old world thinking that's still, you know, they're still stuck in the past kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we have companies like Spotify, like Coinbase, like Airbnb that are coming out of the woodwork and saying, okay, realistically, technology is a thing that we've now been living with for 20 years. And the 9-to-5, right, that old traditional concept was actually coined in 1940 something. And
oh, I thought
originally...
it was a Dolly Parton song. I'm just saying. it was yeah. before that. She didn't come up with working 9-to-5.
No, we're not blaming Dolly for all our problems. She was reminding us how crazy it is that we're still yes. using concepts from like the 1800s. It's literally from the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, I think that the fact is that we're seeing progress, and we're seeing that like it is possible to work remotely, to work hybrid, to work in person. And, you know, people will find the right cultures that suit them and how they, you know, for how they want to live their lives. Mm-hmm. I'm really a big believer in that. I don't think every company needs to be one way. I think every culture, dependent on how the people there want to work, will find their way eventually. And in the next 10 years, you know, that it will look a little messy, and it does.
Yeah. I love that. I think what you paint there is a picture that is very easy for a lot of people to understand. Like, COVID just was a shock to the system. It was an awakening. It gave us time where we were bored. And what do you think what do you do when you're bored? You think, right? And you reevaluate and you ask why. And I think that then led to, now we're in this like, now what phase of, okay, yeah. this shift has taken place. We know people are thinking differently, but how do we do that well? Now, one word that I know you use a lot in your writing is intentional. And I love that because I think as we become, you know, as we become more evolved and as we think through things and as we ask why, a big part of that becomes the things that we do become intentional rather than accidental. So I'm curious how you see the journey of being more intentional in your life for an individual. And then I'd ask you the same thing about a business. How does a business become more intentional in the experience that they create?
Yeah. I'll say for myself, when I did graduate into the pandemic, I found myself in a toxic workplace, which I tried so hard to avoid, like you have no idea. and
And explain toxic workplace to me. Like,
yeah.
What for you, like, clicked those bells?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a good question, too, because people are talking about, like, what does toxic culture actually mean?
Yeah.
And I'll explain that. So I was always searching for something that was values aligned, where, you know, my values and what I believed and really aligned with the company. And so things like, you know, I am super passionate about helping people figure out the best path for them. And so I thought, oh, I'll go work for, you know, a startup that's maybe doing that in the hiring space. And that's what I did. When I arrived, I was hybrid and I was like working part-time really. So I was going to the founder's house. That's where our office was. Mm-hmm. And like three times a week. And I was on a small team of like four of us. And we worked really well together. We had like these 2-hour chats, like just with the, you know, me and the founder, and she was really trying to help me learn about the HR space. Loved that, right? As soon as it went remote, as soon as the pandemic happened, as soon as I went back to New York and lived with my parents, it turned toxic. And what that really looked like was waking up every day, right? Working on LA hours, mm-hmm. which is 12 to 8. And like, essentially getting on a call every day to then be asked, you know, to stay after and to be questioned and to be probed and to be like, well, why did you do this? And kind of like an accusatory way. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I was told to, you know, manage a team of like 10 interns. They were unpaid, not values aligned. And they had never worked an internship in their life. So I was put in this position where like I had no training, even though I'm a very intuitive person and I like to think that I'm a great leader. I had no training and I, you know, attention to detail was like lacking. So, you know, some things slipped through the cracks and instead of helping me and to, you know, show me process or to, you know, look things over one last time, it became, well, you made this mistake and like, it's your fault. And why this, why that? The other thing is like the language, right? It's like my time is more valuable than yours, or you're entitled because you went to USC. A boss should never speak to anyone, should never speak to anyone like that.
Yeah.
And when you wake up, you know, and you're burnt out, you're unmotivated, you're questioning everything. You're questioning your own abilities and your own character traits, that is when it becomes toxic. And really, it was, you know, one day I sat down and I wrote out the pros and cons. And I, you know, it takes a certain level of like macro thinking to do that and be like, yeah. Oh, okay. So like pros of leaving, mental health, more positive. Cons of staying, mental health. Negative. So I was like, oh, okay. So that makes sense. Right. And there were a bunch of other reasons related to some of the things I mentioned. But at the end of the day, it's like she needed me more than I needed her. And that was just what it was. So because I had been in those situations, and then 3 weeks later, I got a job at a startup. And, you know, the second slide of the onboarding deck was all about diversity and inclusion. And I thought, okay, so this is what it looks like to be in a truly inclusive environment where they don't just talk about it on their website, but like it's literally the second slide on their onboarding deck. And it's literally baked into the product and what we're selling. And, you know, I think it's kind of just like a lot of reflection that happens.
So
repeat the question because
no,
I just went on
really
the
good. I mean, you just went through the process of finding that intention, right? And really doing a good job of comparing a business, one that allowed you to be intentional and was empowering and was trying to make it so you didn't feel burnt out and you were excited about what you were doing, as opposed to one that there's always almost like this class system a little bit. Like, I've got to let you know as your leader that you are below me and I am above you, and let's keep that straight. And I don't think that perspective is going to fly in this new environment.
Not at all. Not at all.
Now tell me, let's talk about it for an individual leader, right? So like, as a leader that, you know, maybe you're not a part of the younger generations even, but you're leading people that are Gen Z. I just hired someone, for example, who it's their first time working out of an office, right? Like, he's 24 years old, very similar to the story you just told. He was actually kind of excited about it. Like, he's getting excited about things that I'm like, you're excited that you have a desk and a computer and like a window, but it's new. So tell me how can I create an environment for employees like that, that want to feel like they're contributing and empowered and fulfilled while still kind of in this hybrid world?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it really starts with asking, you know, and learning those things about like, what was the most exciting part of onboarding for you? You know, was it opening a gift, right? Or your computer? Was it, you know, coming to the office and meeting someone new? Was it going to a conference with me? Mm-hmm. Asking them, how do you like being engaged? There's nothing wrong with that, right? And I think it also relates to one of the exercises I did when I arrived at that really positive culture, was sitting down with my boss, and, you know, he asked me, oh, can you write, you know, a couple things, like 5 to 10 goals that you want to achieve in your first 6 months here?
Oh, I love
and that might've looked like, you know, meeting new people, learning more about AI, attending an industry event, helping to plan a conference, right? It was these things that I wanted to enhance my learning or understanding and personally grow. And he sat down with me and went through each one, you know, writing an action plan. Oh, okay. So you're going to meet with one person per week, one new person via the Donut Slack app, and you'll have a call with them. Second one, right? You're going to join the partnerships team because you want to learn about partnerships. I ended up creating decks and presenting decks of like a shared vision between the company I worked for and the potential partner. And I would literally present that like on a call with everyone on there. And like, just the experience and being given the opportunity to put into words what I wanted, and then to be guided and helped along the way of like, this is how we're going to achieve these goals. Not only did it give me, you know, more purpose and motivation, but also my bosses, you know, clarity on how they could engage me and get me excited. I think, you know, the other part of this whole thing is like, purpose is really important here. And I think that I've written an article about this before, where it's like, if you really think about the role of an entrepreneur, of a CEO, not of these Fortune 500 companies, but like scale it back to like the inception, like the creation of these ideas. What is your main goal? To sell the idea to investors, to employees, to partners, to whoever, right? And obviously the goal is to like make it profitable in most cases, but also to get people bought into the mission. So when I see that, like, that, you know, line of like purpose sort of drops off, I'm like, well, that organization needs help to revitalize that, because the purpose could be the reason why someone's joining. And in many cases it is, right? It's why they stick around, or it's the attachment to, it's like the things that spur out of that purpose, right? The company events, the retreats, the selling, the upskilling, it's all of those things that maybe that purpose is the thing that's driving it. And I think we often forget that that's really important, and there's multiple ways to drive that forward. So I guess those are two things. And then if you take it like on the macro, kind of zoom out and you think about Gen Z, right? How do we attract and retain Gen Z talent? There was a study that the Muse it's a job board for like younger talent, millennial and Gen Z talent. They did a research study, and according to the Muse, the top five things that millennials and Gen Z look for in a job, right? Looking into that, one, work and life health. Two, professional development. Three, people or environment or culture. Four is compensation. And five was benefits and perks. Now, Connor, of those things, which do you think organizations focus on the most, maybe at fault?
For sure, it would be four and five. Compensation and, oh, here's the cool lunchbox.
Now you wonder why organizations are struggling to attract and retain Gen Z talent.
Yeah. I think that's so well put. And I think a great lesson for anyone running a business now about being intentional about your purpose. And then more importantly, making sure that's communicated. Because what you just explained to me there was a situation where you're on equal playing fields. And it's not a boss telling you what you need to do. It's a boss helping you get where you want to go, which is a totally different paradigm. And, you know, when I get asked, like, how do you keep people empowered and fulfilled in the workplace? I say, well, there's two things that have got to be a part of it. Like, one, the individual has to feel that they're a part of something that's going to win, and that what a win looks like is something that they're motivated to make happen. While secondly, individually, like on a personal level, if that win happens, they will win too. And I think as a leader, like if your main goal is to help other people win, you can't help but win yourself, right?
100%.
To me, I just think that's such a good example of a good boss that gets it and is creating an environment where he's going to get the best output out of those that are helping him win.
Yeah. And I've spoken to multiple leaders about the same thing that I really admire. One of them, for example, is Sammy Courtwright. She's the founder of TenSpot, which is an employee engagement platform. And, you know, she and I had this really interesting conversation on Clubhouse back when it was a thing. And we were talking about remote culture and how you retain people. And, you know, they've done plenty of studies about Gen Z, which definitely look into those because they're really interesting. But one of the conversations that we had was really about, okay, well, if you have some, if someone comes to me, one of my employees, and they say, listen, Sammy, I don't know that I'm really learning in the way that I want to here. And I have this other job opportunity or maybe several, and I'm kind of thinking about them. She'll basically say, well, if it doesn't work out here, you know, I want you to win. A job is, you know, what's the purpose of a job? A job is to help you learn and develop skills and grow and to understand more of like what you want out of your career and also your life. And if you've sort of done the growing you need to do at a specific company and there's no more growing to do, then like, okay, like it served its purpose. And she basically was like, I'm ready to let them go if that's the best thing for them. And I just thought that was such an evolved level of thinking, because, you know, it takes a lot for a leader to say, oh, like loyalty isn't the most important thing in the world. Like, I think that we've so, you know,
so true.
The older generations have become so obsessed with this idea of loyalty. Like, loyalty should get me huge discounts on my car, on my car payments and my rental car payments. I remember having this conversation with my mom being like, she's like, oh, I've been an Avis member forever. And now what does it get me? Like, what is loyalty anymore? And I'm like, that's such an interesting point. What does loyalty get you anymore? Certainly in a job, in a, you know, traditional corporate environment, it doesn't get you paid much more. And a lot of the time, you can't change much in an organization. A lot of like, you know, the things that impact you daily, like you can't really change a lot of bureaucratic environments super well. Like you just have to have the seniority. And And it sucks because I do wish that more Gen Zers were involved in, you know, the conversations about reimagining work and what that looks like in every organization. But most companies aren't actually asking their workers how they work best or what they want. And that's a missed opportunity. But it's not to say that is, you know, that you should stay around and stick around somewhere where you're done growing. And I really appreciate those leaders who are willing to put the time and energy into not just investing in you, but like following up. And like 6 months later, after writing those six things, I had a follow up with my, or even 3 months later, I had a follow up with my boss. And he was like, how are you doing on each of the six things? And how can we improve and, you know, make sure that we get there in the next 3 months? And I mean, that just means the world. It like makes me feel valued and seen and heard and understood in a way that I had never felt in any job.
I love that thought on loyalty, because I think at the root of that is the desire to control, right? If you feel that someone's loyal to you, you feel like, well, they're not going anywhere. They're staying here. They owe me something. And that mindset leads to you not treating people well, right? And not treating people in a way that, you know, doesn't look at them like a number or an employee. And so I think I may look at the word loyalty a little differently now after you said that. I definitely think there's been an evolution of that character trait, I guess. I want to shift gears a little bit now and talk about a blog that you wrote that I really liked, where you said that you feel that your 20s are a time to figure things out, to expand your knowledge and figure it out. And then you introduced this concept of the Hell Yes Challenge. And I'm like, I really like this. So tell me about this Hell Yes Challenge.
Yeah, that's a good, one. It's really, you know, at the end of the day, I'm living this lifestyle of traveling the world. And when I took the job at Cafe, I was in a place where I had just basically the job I was at that I talked about before, we were getting acquired. And it was a moment of a lot of networking, a lot of connection with new people, a lot of just exposing me to a new industry of the future of work that had just never existed before. It was really separate. It was like workplace and real estate and people ops. And now it's kind of all coming together, right? So I was seeing this birth and the reimagination of work. And I was like, wow, that's like really inspiring. I want to be on the cutting edge of that. And I also knew that, you know, given my recent realization that you could work from anywhere because remote work is a thing. I was like, oh, okay. The next job I have, I want to be able to travel the world, even better if they're paying for it, right? And fast forward about a year later, I've now come to Paris 4 times. I've now visited several European cities in between, right? Also on my own dime. But at the same time, I go back home to New York and I see my friends, and some of them have actually met up with me in Europe, and that's been awesome. And then for the majority, it's like a lot of people talk about traveling and like doing things, and they don't actually do it. And I found myself also doing this, like 100%, not saying that I'm perfect or that, you know, I do everything I say I'm going to do, but like I'm trying more and more so to do that. And because also as I think about my own, you know, what I want for myself and my own potential partner in life, you know, you always crave the things in someone else that maybe you don't have yourself. And I'm like, oh, I want someone who is willing to say yes to things and to obviously have like boundaries and goals, like a 6-month plan, which I now have, right? But I also want someone who is willing to like say, why not? And who I can say that with. So as I start to become more of the person that I want to meet, right, and spend my life with, it's like, okay, I have to find that within myself. And I also have to like put it out into the world, because people love being on journeys with other people. I love when, you know, my friend Esprit Devorah, she's a podcaster. You have to meet her for sure.
Let's do it.
She, you know, put out this thing. She was like, I'm going to do 20 events in 1 month, and you know they're all going to be in LA, and they're going to be focused on the We Are LA Tech podcast community. She's one of the pillars of the LA podcast or the LA tech scene. And so she did this thing, and she's taking us on this journey, right? Oh, I just did event number one. I'm so pumped. And obviously by event 19 or 20, she was like, oh my God, I'm like, I need to go away on a retreat somewhere. But the point is, you know, we felt that with her, and it was so special to be able to like see her grow. And so, you know, I like to think that I'm sort of doing that with my community that I've built of like, yeah. Okay, I'm in my 20s, and whether you're also in your 20s or you're, you know, 50 something, like I want you to be on this journey with me, because then you can really understand what it's like to be a 20 something year old with no responsibilities and really no limitations of thought, of location, of, you know, I can't do this. Like, let's see how much we can do. And it, you know, starts to then gain momentum, and you get cheerleaders, and you get people who are willing to put you in spaces and on stages that you wouldn't otherwise be on, like this podcast, for example. Sure. Right?
I think that's so well said. We, you know, I think people, they'll ask me about my podcast and be like, so what is it about? And I think what you just described right there is this fact that, like, you just talked about relationships, you talked about work, you talked about the life you want to live and travel, and those lines are blurred. You know, like, I think in old school ways of thinking, it was like, oh, you had your work life and that sucked, and that was the 9 to 5, and everybody's working for the weekend, you know, and then the weekend's when we're this different person and we enjoy. And I feel now so much more excitement about this vibe of work shouldn't necessarily be a drag. And it shouldn't be something that you feel like you're forced to do. And then outside of that is where you have your agency back. Like, you can create an environment in today's world that is fulfilling in all of those different aspects. And you can be the same person in the workplace that you are in your relationship, that you are with friends. And I think that is, like, when you say work futurist, I feel like that at the core is this, the lines are blurred between what is work and what is life. Would you agree with that?
Totally. There's the, you know, there's been this new sort of term. It went from, and I actually have a graphic on this that I'm going to post soon, which is, it went from work-life balance, where it was this, you know, concept of like, you have to balance the two, and like the two things are actually separate, but like equal, but like, how do you balance work and life equally? Like, yeah. That's so stressful. Right. And also what you said relating to like personal identity. And then it was like, you know, work-life integration was born. And that was more this concept of like, oh, the two are mixed. So, you know, but like still, you know, it has the emphasis on work and then life, right? It's kind of like, okay, I'm like working maybe to live, but like also, I don't know. And then it's like life work integration, which is what I identify with, which is like, okay, I'm not living to work, but I'm working to live. And I also am like able to be who I am at work and also in the professional sense. But like the two are very much mixed, because I am who I bring like anywhere, like I am me regardless. Right. So like, why should that differ? Obviously I'm not going to wear, you know, a low cut top and like a short skirt and walk into a meeting. But I think still this idea that like you kind of have to separate who you are is so outdated, and it doesn't make any sense.
I've never thought about this question in that way, but you know, on the show, I always talk about extremes, and I'm against extremes. Like, when we think in polarities, we just never come together. And so those, you know, work and life, these are two different sides of the spectrum that people would have said. And I think what you just said is the key to find the middle on that is to bring the two together. It's not to balance, well, how many hours of my day is work and how many hours is life and how do I create that? It's Your work is your life. In fact, it's a big part of it, hours and hours a day, and it shouldn't be something that is looked at as a different category. And so I think you just gave to our listeners a way to find the middle, like we all often do on this show, of work-life integration. And how do you make it so those two don't really seem to be distinguished from one another?
Yeah. And you know, I will say that it comes with its challenges. It's mm-hmm. not by any means easy. And I have this friend, Taylor Harrington, who she's a community manager, and she's the community manager of an app that basically is for solopreneurs and entrepreneurs to get stuff done together. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, this community, it's called Groove. And it's, you know, she's kind of opened up to me about her relationship with the people and the community on there, because it's like there are people on there that like she wants to be friends with, but at the same time, like, it's work. So it's important for her to, I think, draw the line of like, you know, I haven't been on Groove. That's not how we met. We met on Twitter, and we've grown this relationship as friends, but like, if I were to go on Groove, does that mean that like I become associated with her work, right? As like a friend. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that's one thing that's a little bit blurry of like, okay, when am I working and when am I off? And so one of the things that she's done has been, you know, on Monday nights, she has a no plans Monday rule where she doesn't go out on Mondays and she just stays in, and regardless of what's happening or where she is, no going out Monday. And that's like, you know, one example. The other example and challenge I think that this brings is, you know, how correlated and interrelated your personal brand and your brand, you know, as part of the company you work for mm-hmm. are. And I don't necessarily think this is the only, you know, if this is only related to people who have this work-life integration. I think that if you are working in the modern world and your company has a presence online, some companies are like asking you to become ambassadors of the brand. And like, what does that really mean? You know, do I feel comfortable posting about this brand on Instagram? Well, if you really believe in the mission and you feel super connected to the company, like you were saying before, you probably will want to post about it and like amplify it. But if not, could that be an indicator that like people aren't feeling so connected or inspired, you know? Yeah. So navigating that line too, for me, even personally, has been a little bit difficult. But I would say like, I'd much prefer the life work integration where I can not feel guilty for going to a doctor's appointment or even taking half a day to go to Meta, to go to Reels school and to learn how to be better at making reels. Like, cause like I'm a creator, right? But I'm also like a marketer, and you know, so it's, yeah, I think there's more benefits of being this way than not.
Man,
for me.
There's been so many things you've said today that have resonated to me, because I've been asked the same questions, or I felt that. And as you were talking about a personal brand, like I've had a lot of people say to me, so is your podcast for your personal brand or for your company? And I say, yes, right? Like it's both of those things. And, you can't separate that. Like, yeah, I started a company at the start of the year and I love it. That's not me as a, you know, 100% of me is now focused on this app, but it's a huge part of it right now. And it's where I'm putting, my time and energy, but I still want to be a part of conversations and that. It's like, again, just this, remove the blinders, have bigger opportunities available to you. And I actually want to end the conversation here. We really haven't even talked about the app that I'm launching. We're going to have to get you on this soon, because I'm sure lots of people are going to want to pay to talk to you about how to be a good leader to Gen Z and future of work and all that. But one of the things that you discussed is friendtorships. And you said that word, and I just want to know from you, like, how can we, as we're all just trying to figure it out, the awakening's happening, we're now in this now what phase, why do you feel these friendorships or other people helping along the way is so important in this journey?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, I've spoken to several leaders, like countless leaders at this point. And one time I got a question from someone who was a lawyer and he worked at a law firm. And he was like, you know, one of my favorite parts of being at the office and one of the reasons why I'm super bummed that we're not requiring people to go back full time is because of the paralegals the new additions to the firm and the students who I used to mentor. And I would see them at the office and we'd go get a lunch or a coffee. And now, you know, it's not the same. And I said, well, have you tried to make it virtual and to just set up calls with some of those, you know, newbies? And he was like, no, I haven't. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, that's a possibility. You could be a little bit more intentional, like that word, right, about your mentorship program. And he was like, oh, like that's food for thought, right? Like, just like, it's not that hard. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, at the end of the day, like, we're all human, right? Like, we all want connection. You could probably assume that someone who's young, and I'm not saying assumptions are a good thing, but like I definitely encourage the sitting down and the writing the goals and all that. But you could probably assume that the people who are going to the office who are like younger are going because like they want to meet other people, mm-hmm. and they want to be mentored and guided and all the things that you probably wanted at the beginning of your career.
Yep.
So, you know, I would say like just think about, right? Like maybe like try to put yourself in the perspective of the people you're leading. You know, oh, like what might they need or want? And always asking those questions is like, you know, it's the best thing you could do. So that's one.
Yeah.
Can you just repeat the question also? Because I have some brain fog today.
No, I'm just teasing. First off, I love what you just said right there in the sense of two things I picked out of that. One, you need to always be willing to put yourself in someone else's shoes, right? Like that is always a good thing to do. But two, in order to do that, you have to talk to them. You have to ask, right? Like you can't just, well, I'm guessing they're like this. I'm going to try to imagine myself in their shoes. Like that conversation is really easy. What do you value? How do you want to be engaged with? How can I help you with that? So I really like if we can keep those two perspectives, that being in place. But I just mm-hmm. wanted to ask you about friendships in general.
Oh, yeah.
Like, why do you think being able to help each other out along the way through this is so important?
Yeah. So I think like we're all learning, you know, we're all in sort of stuck in this like unknown, like we don't know what's going to happen with what the next app will be, right? We don't all know how we're going to love learning in the future, how the metaverse is going to work. And, you know, something really interesting to me has been to learn about these emerging technologies and to get involved in projects where I'm working with people of different ages and maybe different stages of life than I am. And one of the, as I look back at like my career and who I've really become in the last 2 years. Funny enough, I spoke to one of my first friendors, Monash, who works at Microsoft. And he was telling me that he does a lot of like alumni involvement. He does a lot of mentoring of, you know, current students to help them get jobs. And he says that he uses me as an example because 2 years ago when we first met, I was so shy about LinkedIn. He was like, oh, you should get on LinkedIn. Like you should like talk about your perspective. And I was like, oh, what would I say? Like, I don't know. And then I went through this like toxic work experience. And one of the things that got me through that was talking to my brother-in-law, talking to people from my high school community, you know, like parents, family, friends, and really relying on people who could help me through it and navigate that, right? And so when yeah, when I was going through all of that and just when Monish kind of said that, I was like, wow, I have done so much in 2 years and look where I am now. And like that growth, right. And I've like built a brand for myself and a community and I'm building a business around that. Right. And so just to kind of, I guess one of the things that friend tours, and I'll get to what it actually means. One of those things that it's really served me has been like recognizing who I am and who I've become and like my growth and sharing that with other people. And also being able to like learn from each other. And this is really the concept of friendtorships, is that like the best friendships have an element of mentorship to them. And the best mentorships become friendships. And so you're constantly able to learn from the other person and also give back. And it's not to say that it has to look equal every time, right? If I'm going through a harder time than my friend tour, one of my friend tours is an old tutor of mine. If I'm going through a harder time or I'm dealing with something more immediate, then like she'll be there for me. And when she's going through something with, you know, navigating social media, I'll be there for her and I'll commit an entire hour to her, right? And so I think that it's just this concept that I came up with on a call with one of my friend tours is this idea that like, you don't have to thank me. I don't owe you anything. You don't owe me anything. Kind of what I felt that term mentorship did, mm-hmm. is it just established this hierarchy. So similar to like in the workplace, it just translates, you know, everywhere. But really the importance is to learn and grow together and to be able to lean on each other in a more vulnerable and authentic way.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. You just in so many ways like talked about the purpose of my company that I'm with right now is that, you know, there's a lot of mentor apps and databases out there, but it's very much like when you come to that site, you're asked, are you a mentor or are you a student? And then you have to apply to be a mentor and you have that badge and you're special. And now everyone else is like trying to sit at the feet and learn. And I think that is just so old school. We all have a passion and expertise, a skill that is something that is valuable to someone else. And so recognizing where we have our own value and being able to bring that to the table with other people, I just think is the future of mentorships and working together and collaboration. And I'm lucky to think that in this new environment that we have, that's way more of a possibility than ever before.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
I love that. Well, let me do this. We got to wrap up. Before I do so, is there anything you want to say in closing?
What do I want to say? I want to say that I'm just really optimistic about where the future of work is headed. And I hope that you're not discouraged or don't let FOMO get in the way of really getting comfortable with thinking about what you want for your own life and taking action on that.
Well said.
And to take like help where you need it. And like, just, you know, the world is full of people who like are going to be there to support you along your journey. So like, there's no reason why you have to do it alone. Community is everything.
Yeah. I love that. And that now segues into where I wanted to end. Like, go join Danielle's community. She's on LinkedIn. Like I said, I followed her for the last little while now and just loved it. It's Danielle Farage, like garage with a G. And where else, or sorry, garage is with a G. You're with an F. I'm sorry. Yeah. Where else can they follow you? Or is there anywhere that people can, you know, become a part of this community with you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I am launching a project that is really for leaders to help them lead and engage and retain Gen Z. Yeah. So definitely be on the lookout for that. You can follow me on LinkedIn.
Cool.
I'm actually right now working on my website. So it's daniellefarage.com. It's like totally in V1 of that, but that is definitely in the works, a new one. And then, yeah, I have a newsletter on LinkedIn as well. So you can, you know, subscribe there. It's called is our Gen Z snowflakes. I think that's what it is, but I'm changing it soon. So I'm in the middle of like a whole rebrand, but
that right there is like, now we have to come back for another episode. We're going to leave this just hanging question. Are Gen Z snowflakes? I say no, but we'll figure that out later. All right. Danielle, thank you so much. Have a great time. It's a Friday, and since you're in Paris, like, it is time for you to go out and party and have fun and be done with the work week. So please enjoy that and have a great weekend. Thanks so much for joining. And I end every show. I did warn her this time, so we're okay. But I do end with a song if you want to join me. Clowns to the left me, jokers to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle with you. See, right. You knew it.
Yeah.
Most Gen Z don't know Steeler's Wheel.
I only know that line. That's stuck in the middle with you.
There we go. Hey, well, thank you so much. Appreciate you, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm.